The election. A groan could be heard across the congregation of Maybridge Community Church. So what are we going to do about that then? Because I don't know about you, but I'm confused. Let's do a quick straw poll this morning. How many people have firmly decided already who they're voting for this May? Okay, that's about a third. How many people have not yet decided who they're going to vote for? Okay, wow, politicians would be very interested to be here this morning. Two-thirds of this congregation are what is called a floating vote. How many people, incidentally, are signed up members of a political party? One, two, okay, great, excellent. And how many people here will be voting for the first time? One, two, three, four. Very good. Okay. So how do we do this thing of here I am living for the glory of Jesus and then needing to put our cross on a ballot paper, making my cross in the light of his cross is the sermon title for this morning. Because I am genuinely confused. There is not one political party that accurately reflects the wisdom of Andy Hickford. Yeah, that was a joke. I recognize that democracy is a great privilege, that many have died for the freedom that I have to vote. I see it both as a gift and a responsibility. But that sort of further heightens my sense of confusion. Because there's the question about, so who am I voting for? Am I voting for our local candidate? Or am I voting for the person I think will make the best prime minister? Or am I voting for the party with the best policies? And I talk to different people and they say different things. I studied politics at A level and my politics teacher couldn't answer that question either. Because that is part of the inherent tension of a democratic process. And there are other confusions as well. Do I want one single party to win? Or do I think that a coalition brings a moderating of some of the excesses of maybe some of the parties? So there's a decision about do I prefer strong government or do I prefer the kind of consensus that coalition encourages? And then, of course, in some constituencies, voting for the party that you most align to is a complete waste of time because there is such a dominant party. But there may be a party that has a chance of unsettling that particular seat, so you end up voting tactically by voting for a party that you completely don't agree with. Go figure. All of those things are part of what it means to be involved in an election in a liberal democratic society. And then, of course, when all else fails, and when you are completely cheesed off with the bunch of them, you can register a protest vote, if you like, the monster raving loony party, or versions of, or not vote at all, which is what a staggering 46% of our nation did last time around. Anybody share my confusion about who to vote for? So this morning, what I want to do is I want to come to our series on the book of Philippians, and I want to just unpack a passage very briefly and then ask the question, what light does this passage shine on how we mark our cross in the light of Christ's cross? And I want to do that in 10 minutes. So let's go to the first. So this is picking up the story in Philippians chapter 1, this letter that Paul wrote in about AD 60 while he was in prison in Rome to a church in Philippi. And Paul was in prison. He was anxious about what the outcome of his trial was going to be, but he was also aware that there was a rumor going around the church, both in Philippi and in Rome where he was, which said, if God thought Paul was so great, why has he allowed him to be in prison? Maybe it's because Paul is preaching and teaching things that God wants to protect the church from. So Paul has got to deal with that. Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace garden to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. So Paul is saying to these people who are putting rumors around why he's in prison, he's saying, hey, number one, this is fantastic because everybody knows that I'm in prison for Christ. The Praetorian Guard who had been overseeing his imprisonment, they've been coming to him saying, Paul, why are you here? You don't seem to be a villain or a terrorist. Why are you here? And so he's had a chance to express his faith. And over a period of time, the whole of the guard has come to know why he's in prison. Everybody knows that Paul is in prison because his faith in Jesus kind of rattles the cage of the Roman Empire. It wasn't an official religion. It could be viewed as treason because Caesar wasn't the highest person in the faith of the Christians. Jesus Christ was. And so everybody knows. So Paul thinks there's some really good purpose in it. But then in verse 14 he says, and because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. So what's happened is what we saw in those early days of the Syrian revolution. Do you remember when the army were just slaughtering innocent protesters? And what happened was that actually more protesters came onto the street as a result. They were so angry at the injustice that the thing gained momentum. And Paul is saying here that that kind of reverse psychology has been happening. The more the Romans persecuted the Christians, the more bold the Christians became. Bearing in mind that the emperor at this point in AD 60 was no other than Nero, and he was reaching the point where he was going completely mad and doing horrific things. So you've got the picture here. Paul is saying there's some good coming from me in prison because, number one, everybody knows, is hearing about the gospel of Jesus, and that's why I'm here. And two, it's emboldened the church. And then he goes, goes on. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but I will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or death. Paul is being very vulnerable here. He's saying, I need your prayers and I need the Holy Spirit because I'm frightened and I don't want to be ashamed. And if it comes to death, I want to die in a way that points to Jesus. He's being very vulnerable and asking the church to pray. And in that context, he comes up with this fantastic phrase. For me to live, for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Quite literally in the Greek, it's for me, Christ, full stop, to die, gain, full stop. What an amazing statement. Everything about Paul's life, where he was, the country he was in, the job that he did, the way he spent his money and his time, everything revolved around Jesus Christ. And he sums it up, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And he goes on to say, look, if I die, that's fantastic for me because I go to be with Jesus. And if I don't die, it's fantastic for you because I can help you and strengthen you and encourage you and teach you as a church. And he said, faced with those two options, I'm not sure which I want. I'm confused because I've had enough of being in prison and being flogged and being beaten. I'd love to be with Jesus. My next waking moment in the presence of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, hearing him say over Paul's life, well done, good and faithful servant. He really looks forward to that. But on the other hand, he wants his church, the Church of Jesus Christ, to be vibrant and triumphant and victorious. And so he wants to stay and bless them. And he has that dilemma. And the way he resolves that dilemma is simply to say, for me to live, Christ, to die, gain. What a marvelous thing. For me to live, Christ, to die, gain. Now the thing is, for every one of us who's in this room this morning who share the same faith as Paul, then we have that same hope that we will one day be with Christ. The difference is in our level of anticipation and excitement about it. For me to live Christ is die, to die is gain. You see, what's gone wrong in our world is we've bought into this idea that's kind of summarized in the American Constitution, but is true of the Western world, which talks about the unalienable right to life and liberty and to the pursuit of happiness. Our lives are all about the pursuit of happiness on this earth. And if we're committed to that principle, death is the very worst thing that could possibly happen because it interferes with our pursuit of happiness. Do you see? Paul didn't share that worldview. His worldview was for me to live Christ, to die gain. He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Why are you spending all your energy and time in the pursuit of happiness in this life when it simply possibly cannot satisfy, and what's more, it possibly cannot last? Paul had a completely different mentality about what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. And you see, what we come back to here is that it's not enough to believe in Jesus. We have to believe in what Jesus believed if we're really going to be free. The only place where you will know peace, the only place where you will be completely free, is actually when we've come to that place of saying, for me to live, Christ, to die, gain. If we are caught up in the pursuit of happiness, and we all are to one degree or another, we can never be at peace and we can never be completely free. Paul had learned that gift, that joy of being content in all circumstances, because his life said simply, for me to live, Christ, to die, gain. Now, what happens, can we go on to the next slide, Michelle? This is not, well, is it frozen? Okay. Ah, there we go. What the problem is that we live in a world which has what's called a selfish reflex. And this is the teaching of John Piper. Let me demonstrate reflex. Huh! He didn't move. That was very disappointing. A reflex is not... Pay attention, will you? A reflex is something that you don't have to think. That woke some of you up, didn't it? A reflex is something that you don't have to think about. You don't have to take any time wondering about. It's just deeply ingrained in who we are, a reflexive reaction. And we live in a world where in this pursuit of happiness, where we're the center of the story, what happens is that selfishness is a reflex. And so that reflex is seen in that we expect others to serve, that we expect is a reflex to feel that I'm owed. That selfishness is a reflex to want praise, a reflex to expect things to go my way, a reflex to react negatively when someone crosses me. All of these things are ingrained in the way we think in the Western world. But Paul says, for me to live is Christ, to die again. So let's come back to the election. In less than 2 weeks, we're going to be asked to vote. How does this phrase, for me to live, Christ, to die gain, how does that inform and help us when it comes to thinking about voting? Well, the first thing to say, oh no, let me come back to that in a moment. The first thing to say is this, that it's not only our privilege to vote, I think that it is our responsibility as Christians to vote. Why do I say that? Because of that phrase, for me to live is Christ. Christ made the world. He loves the world. He died for the world. We can't say ever that the people and the government of this country is unimportant to the Christ we worship. It's his. The whole earth belongs to Jesus. So if you are a Christian and you want to say, for me to live is Christ, I can't see that you have any option other than to vote. Let me say that again. We need to vote. If you can't be bothered, Christ is not the Lord of your life. If we worship the Lord of the universe, he is really interested in what happens in this general election, and we have a part to play in that. The second thing that runs on from that is that, well, come on then, if we have got to vote, we better get informed. Now, normally that meant trawling through lots of party political literature and manifestos and the rest of it. But actually, there are some great online resources. This has given up me, so can we go to the next one? There are some great online resources I just want to recommend to this morning. iSideWith.com. I really, really recommend this. It asks you a load of questions about all sorts of things, and you put your answer in, and then it analyzes your survey, and it relates it to the policies of the main political parties and says, okay, with this set of answers, you would be 71% most likely to vote Liberal Democrat. You know, it's fun. And it's interesting as you see what parties align with the view you take on particular issues. The second one is on the BBC News website, which does a similar thing where it asks you various questions and shows you which party you're most closely aligned to. Either one of those is a fun way of getting informed. It'll take you about 15 minutes and it'll begin to help you see where your views align with the party's views. Now, the only problem with that so far, next question, Mish, is that actually we've got to be very careful about the views we have, because Jesus doesn't just baptize our prejudice. So the third point here is, number one, I not only have a right to vote, but a Christian duty to vote. Number two, I need to do what I can to make an informed choice. Number three, my choice cannot be on the basis of self-interest. Why? Well, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who made himself nothing. If we are a Christian, we cannot, we must not vote on the basis of which party we will do best under. That is totally unchristian. It cannot be worshipful in any way or expression. Am I making myself clear? Good. Number four, it probably shouldn't be based on one issue alone. Why? Well, for me to live is Christ, and Christ is the Lord of the whole earth. He's more interested in one particular issue. I have respect for people who will say, well, this issue is so important to me, but that doesn't sit well with me. That avoids for me the complicated work of working out which party I'm going to support, even when I fundamentally disagree with some of their policies. Because there is a breadth of issues here if we're going to worship this Christ of the whole world. And then that follows on to, it's more than about the economy. Why? For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. What profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul? There are other things about the health of the nation other than its bank balance. Now, that's not to say for a moment that I don't think we should be doing something about the deficit. That is to live in a complete cuckoo land. But you hear what I'm saying? When it all comes down on our political analysis to the economy, Christians have got another perspective, because actually, where there is a life beyond death, there is a quality of life beyond the economy. Brothers and sisters, the news is that all of us have a prayerful and worshipful responsibility to seek Jesus in the fog of our current political parties. We need to vote. We need to make it an act of worship. We need to be informed, and we must make sure that we do our level best for Christ's priorities to shape ours. If we can go to that last slide, Michelle. Lord, please help me make my cross in the light of yours. In the end, Christians will come to different conclusions. I understand that. But the way we come to those conclusions is all important. The process by which you decide to vote is actually probably more important in our relationship with God than how we vote. But he holds us all responsible to live in this partnership with him. Christ in me, the hope of glory. for me to live Christ, to die gain. Can you see how just one short verse like that from Philippians actually shed some pretty challenging light on what we have about, what we're about as a nation in the next couple of weeks? And I pray that that will lead us to think and pray and consider more carefully that we might make godly and worshipful choices.